Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now, here are three guys who put the fine in fine woodworking. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
Go Rockler! Rockler, Rockler, Rockler. Am I not supposed to be talking right now? Still warming up.
Shut up, Matt. Trying to do a show here.
Is that what we're doing?
What are you doing, man?
I don't know.
I think so.
I'm just trying to have fun, you know? I'm enjoying my Sunday with my buddies. Maybe even my best friends. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows what you guys are to me?
Well, look, at this point in our lives, we don't have any other friends. This is about as good as it's going to get. So.
This is really...
I mean, seriously, let's not, not worry about it too
You're
much.
It. Stuck with you guys.
Yeah. Okay, well, it is show number...
Or just be friendless.
Yeah, just own it. It's good. Show number 549 today. And we're going to talk about hand plane blades, domino connectors versus IKEA, finish curing and cold temps, and wood floor expansion. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler's been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years, and Rockler's giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before May 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And
you know,
and
I think before Matt Shannon, goes into that,
my flow, Shannon. It's gone.
See,
I know,
now you know what
I'm
it feels like, Matt,
it to keep you on your toes. Matt, Mark plays the drums. I can play the piano. Can you play anything? Because I think we need to do this music live one time. Just like launch into the show with a live version of this song. I think I can pull off this piano part with a little practice.
The piano was the only thing I attempted to learn as a child to have some kind of musical thing. And then that was probably 30 years ago. So I would say no. I can't play anything.
So what you're saying is Matt's on cowbell.
I can do cowbell. Maybe.
Yeah, more cowbell.
I don't know. I'm not that great at keeping the beat, though. So we'll see.
Or the little finger cymbals. Yeah.
This song sets a lot of organ, little finger tickling the ivories going on there.
I think I could pull that off.
Pretty good. You can pull it off?
I have to stretch.
I just clap.
We'll work on it. That's good. You always need one of those in a band.
Or I could just be like, wasn't it like in the background for the music video or something. I don't know.
Isn't it like the Boston's were one of those bands that just had a guy that danced on stage?
That's all he did. That's like, what is that a seizure or is that a dance move? I don't know. But it looks good.
No. It's okay, buddy. It's all right. Mateo wants to do his own show here. Okay, fine. Do your announcement. Make it quick. Come on.
Subscribe to Wood Talk.
Oh, perfect. We have the show in video now.
Thank you.
It's perfect. Thank you, Mateo. Fantastic lead. That's right. Make sure you check out the YouTube channel where you can see our stupid faces as we talk to you.
And you can see me awkwardly trying to parent while doing a show.
Yeah, but you're good at it. Good times. See, good at the awkward parenting.
I just love what has happened since I disrupted Matt's flow. This show is off the rails and we're like gone. Less than a minute in. It's fantastic.
Absolutely not sure good. We ever were on.
I did
rails,
that.
But
I did that.
Good job, Shannon.
I have to say though, having the YouTube channel thing going, I do like it because there is a lot more like feedback and comments there. Not that no one ever wrote in before when it's just audio, but I think because it's on YouTube, people are more used to like, I'm actually going to comment. It's actually fun to be like, oh, people actually watched this.
Yeah, it's a little more responsive, and it's the platform is built with the responses like as part of it.
Yeah.
Whereas like going, you know, you listen in your car and you go, well, I should email those guys later. And then you get home and other things happen. So
that feels too formal. Yeah,
it is cool. I'm enjoying it too. Anyone who hasn't checked it out, you got to go see these video versions of this. Todd, who does all the editing for the Wood Whisperer, he also does the editing for this stuff. And he's getting real good at it. He makes it a nice, clean edit, throws a lot of fun visual aids in there, and just a lot of it's just funny stuff. If you look away for a couple of seconds, you might miss something really hilarious. So you got to watch the whole thing. It's really, really cool. So thanks for that, Mateo, wherever you went.
Wait, he's gone already?
Okay. Yeah, oh yeah. He's on to something else. He's probably playing a video game now. That was it. He wanted to do his little appearance, and he's done.
It's like, I'm gone. Nice. You're not cool anymore, Dad. I'm out of here.
No. He looks at her subscriber numbers and he just is like, I don't even know why you bother.
So he's like our biggest supporter. Oh,
he's right. Quite the critic.
Should he maybe become a patron? And then I can read his name.
But then, sure.
There you go. Yeah.
That's fine. Let's pretend.
You can mispronounce it. I'd love to hear how you pronounce Spagnolo.
That might be one he knows. Maybe.
Maybe.
Just because I know it or not doesn't mean I'm not going to mispronounce it or not. That's like, it's not related.
Yeah.
Doesn't make a difference. Anyway, that was supposed to be my little lead into our Patreon message. If you want to help support the show, like Mateo might, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. We'd like to thank the one and only, the great William M. Hopper or Hooper. I don't know. Whatever.
Two O's.
Thank you. Better counter than me. Dylan Trelawney, Andy Glenep, and Erica Tesla.
Well, thank you, everybody, for supporting the show. We really appreciate it. I think we should get to what's on the bench. Let's actually do some woodworking talk. Yeah.
Sure. Sounds good.
Never mind. Let's talk about kids.
I'm just having fun talking about kids.
So I'm still working on my sideboard. It's going super slow. Got a lot of life distractions right now. And the shop is, it's busy, but every time I go in there, and this is one of those things where if I lose focus, I'm going to screw something up or put a domino in the wrong place or something goofy like that. So I am taking my time with it, but it's really dragging. And it's at that point, I'd call it maybe the 65% point on this project where I kind of just want it to be over today. So we'll see how that goes. I got some of the trickiest stuff to come, but it's just with all the distractions and things going on in life, it's a project like this is not my favorite kind to do at a time like that, because I find myself losing focus. If I can't stay in the zone on the project, it's very easy for me to come back and then just do something, just a complete boneheaded move. And I've got to be real careful with that because I don't want any of those on this one. So I'm currently making the interior panels. There's going to be drawer slides attached to these, so I don't want movement in there, and kind of painted myself in a corner with the design where it's a frame and panel, and I was doing solid panels everywhere else. But then on this interior, I'm going to be attaching drawer slides to it. And I was thinking, well, you could probably get away with putting a drawer slide on a sliding or on a panel that's kind of a floating panel. And maybe it'll be okay for a while, but like over time, you got to imagine it's going to stress those screws at the very least. And eventually something may work itself out. So I'm like, that's just not good woodworking to do it this way.
I feel like it would just kind of move enough where it would shift over time that like the operation of the drawer wouldn't quite be
right. It would affect the drawer.
Nice.
Something's going to get whacked out. Yeah.
Or then you realize it's just something.
Well, and it's a little bit of resistance and you push through the resistance and then over time something just breaks. And I'm like, I'm showing people how to do this. I need to do it the right way. So I don't want to buy an entire piece of half inch walnut ply. So I was like, what can I do? I've got some half inch MDF for this panel sitting over there that I'm not using for anything else. Probably won't use for anything else. And then I've got, of course, plenty of walnut. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to veneer up some panels for this. It's like a little bit overboard for what it is, but it'll look good. It'll match the project and it'll give me what I need.
Overboard. So. What are you talking about?
Sometimes it feels overboard, Matt.
That's when you know you're doing it right. When you have that,
you feel like you're going too far.
That's when you get like in the right spot with it.
Right. You know when you feel you've gone too far, go a little bit further.
Then that's the perfect spot.
Yeah, that's the sweet spot. So that's really about it for me. I've got some really fun stuff coming up with that. But like I said, I just got to keep my head on straight so I don't make dumb mistakes.
Well, it's also kind of like a different, I think it feels different enough from the things you've made in the past where it's like you kind of have to be in that zone of like understanding what's going on with that project, because you could screw something up pretty quickly or miss something or have some kind of oversight that could bite you in the butt pretty easily.
Well, and a lot of this was designed like well ahead of time. And we've already got like a sketch that we're going off of. So I've got sliding doors. Those sliding doors will go in front of the drawer compartment in the center. So I got to make sure that the sliding doors don't hit the partitions. And then I got to make sure that the drawer fronts are going to live in the right location. And then with all of this, we have, we kind of limited the total depth of the unit, but we have drawer slides, undermount drawer slides, which also have, especially if you ever use like, I don't know, maybe all the brands are like this, but the Bloom ones, the instructions are really tricky. So when you want to find what is your absolute minimum interior dimension that you'll be able to use that slide in, like, good luck with finding those exact numbers and understanding them when you see them. It's something that like, if you do a few, you'll be fine. But when you're first doing it, it's tricky as hell. So a lot of this is theoretical numbers that I have to hit. And I'm assuming everything is going to fit until I actually start to put it together. So it's all theoretical on SketchUp. And I think we're going to be just fine. But it does have me like, I really got to pay attention on this one. Cannot phone this one in. So that's me. Shannon, what's your problem?
Actually, I have a problem. I have a real problem. I want to throw this out to the community because it's kind of upsetting. I have a pair of Phil Koontz Holdfasts. So go back to the Schwarz Blue workbench book, the original. Mm-hmm. So this was 2008. And in that book, he had a pair of Holdfasts from this guy up in Alaska. And I was like, those are cool. I went and bought them. He has long ago retired. He may have even passed away. I don't know. He was up there. I mean, he retired probably 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy that was colloquially known as Jake the Russian who took over and was making the same Holdfasts. And his last name starts with a P, I think. And it's a very Slavic last name, which is why the people call him Jake the Russian. Jake the Russian has since retired. And no one is making these Holdfasts anymore. Black Bear Forge kind of picked up the mantle a while ago, and I have a pair of those, but they're not quite the same. So long story short, these Holdfasts are like they're antiques now. They cannot be had anymore. And mine have just stopped working like almost overnight. Like, and so my question to the audience, to the people who understand metal, because I'm a dumb woodworker, I don't get it. Can like the ductile nature of steel or iron, I guess is what we're talking about here, actually change over time? Because my Holdfasts have always worked. And I don't have like, you know, undercut holes on my bench or any of that stuff. I don't have an overly thick bench. It's always been these Holdfasts. And they say that blacksmith forged Holdfasts always are a little bit sweeter. They're a little bit more ductile. You know, so when you whack it with a mallet, it flexes and it really holds well. I could set these Holdfasts with like a stern glance. Like it did not take a huge wallop of the mallet. It was just a light tap. I could even like use the heel of my hand and set them, and they held really, really well. And they've always held really well. And people are always like, man, where did you get this Holdfast? And unfortunately, I can't point you at anybody. Nobody makes them anymore. And now it's like they become hardened and they don't flex anymore. And this literally, I was doing a demo and it like started to happen. It's like, oh, that didn't set on the first whack. And I had to hit it again and it set. And like over the course of this demo, I actually have it on film. They stopped working. I cannot imagine what has happened. And now it's like 3 weeks later and they don't work worth a damn. Like they do not flex and cam in the hole. Now I've cleaned the shaft. I cleaned it off.
But keep
to make
doing
sure
that
wasn't
hand
like,
motion yes. as much as possible.
More of that, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you could, I'll do that a lot. If you prefer, I can grab it.
And there you go. Perfect.
Those of you, if you haven't watched it on video, you want to just for that.
You
want
to go but in I and cleaned out, them off. Make sure. Side, by the way.
Oh, fair enough. Thanks, Matt. You would know that.
I would. Yes.
So anyway, serious things here. Like, I've cleaned it off, made sure there was no wax or I got anything on the shaft that could possibly making it not slip in the hole. I haven't done anything to my bench, but my workbench is like, it's not like moving around or anything. My workbench is 10 years old. I've never had an issue. So to the metallurgists and the blacksmiths out there, is this crazy? Like, please tell me there's something I can do to revive these holdfasts. Like, what the hell? Like, it's really upsetting because I've come to rely on those. That is my primary work holding for everything I do. And the fact that I now have to like whack it 3 and 4 times to set that holdfast, and even then it's not holding well. I'm starting to like understand, like if you go into forums, you see people constantly complaining about, I can't get my holdfast to work. And, you know, people will counterbore the underside of the workbench. They'll take like, you know, heavy duty sandpaper and scuff up the shaft and all kinds of little techniques out there. And I suppose I could try counterboring the underside of my workbench, but why now? Like, yeah, why all if it of a didn't, sudden?
Yeah, if it wasn't a problem before, it's really sucky to have to do it now.
So, and my obvious void is I'm not a metal worker. I don't work with it at all. I don't really know anything about metallurgy. In fact, there's kickback later in the show about how little I know about metallurgy. So please, somebody who does know what they're talking about, please write in or send in a voicemail and let me know. I probably should email Schwarz too. I'm really curious because he had those same holdfasts. Now he's got his own tool company, Crucible, making their own holdfasts. So maybe he doesn't use those anymore, but it's just really upsetting because this is a piece of history. These holdfasts are beautiful and they cannot be had anymore. And I hate to think that they're not usable anymore.
And both of them are behaving the same way?
Exactly the same. Like one started to go, air quotes, whatever that means. One started like, it was giving me trouble and I was like, all right, I took it out and I put the other one up and that one worked. And then that one stopped working. It's so weird. Like,
have you cleaned up the holes? Like maybe with a boring bit or something, just go in there and take a fresh pass?
No, I haven't. I have that. And they are, you know, like I'm sitting at my workbench right now and you'd be glad Matt can't see this as I stick my fingers in the holes. Cause I know he'll come up with something.
You gotta rake it around, you know,
but they, they definitely feel burnished. They definitely feel quite smooth. So maybe I need to,
It's how nice and say smooth. It's just a visual.
Just whole here we go. Hand. Here we go.
Oh, look, there you go. So
they're quite burnished in there. So maybe
I was going to say, because over time you're burnishing it, you're crushing the fibers. I just wonder if you haven't just kind of the same thing that would happen if you like spill finish in the hole. You just kind of sealed it up and it's not gripping as well.
It's just weird because
the thing behind you? Go get your little egg beater and do it right now live.
Yeah, what happens. Put a new hole in your bench and try it.
There we go.
Start fresh.
No, actually, that's a good idea, Matt, because I could use another hole on the front edge of my bench. I'll create a new hole and see what happens. But for me, the tactile feedback from the holdfast itself feels different. Now, that could be because it's slipping in the hole.
Yeah, it's not
very grabbing. Possible. But to me, it doesn't feel like the holdfast flex like they used to. When you tap it, it would kind of, you would see it actually kind of smush down in the hole a little bit. And it's now kind of springier. Like you hit it and it just springs right back. Like it's not as malleable anymore. It's
my money is on the bench. Almost.
Yeah, I have to believe. But again, since I know nothing about metallurgy, I wanted to throw that out there. So please feel free to write in and tell me, you are an idiot. You know, it's not going
to
change.
It'd be kind of interesting to see if there actually, regardless of what happens with yours, is there like actually a point where a holdfast, you know, wears out?
Right. Yeah. You know.
You
I wonder,
think if you like, if you flex that thing enough times over its life, you're eventually going to do something to it, right?
Actually, stay tuned because that's what the kickback is about. So keep listening for another at least 5 minutes. You can tune out after that.
At least that.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll hear something.
So anyway, Matt, over to you, Matt. Oh,
thank you, Shannon. Over to me.
That's what it said in the script. So I had to read that.
Okay.
No, it didn't. Fine.
No, it did.
Whatever.
He's pretending.
Whatever. Okay, so I just finished up a week of filming with my videographer, editor guy, Brad. We did some
when did you get one of these?
Like a year and a half ago.
Mark's concerned you're cheating on him or something. Like,
no, I just really... never heard about this. Is this the guy that just comes down once in a while?
Yeah.
Okay, now I know about it. Okay, proceed. I thought this was like a new thing.
We're going to start probably doing it more often now that I'm kind of getting more back into the normal rhythm of my life, which is good.
Sure.
So we were going to shoot a whole week on the sawmill, but I think we scheduled this like a week too early because last week was still like too cold, too miserable to really utilize that. So we ended up just kind of shooting in the afternoons after the temps kind of warmed up, because otherwise the morning is still like 20 degrees out. And I'm like, I ain't feeling it. I ain't feeling it. But we finished up the dust collection install in the barn. We did one new thing, which I have never done before, is I had him shoot a quick video in the shop. So I've never had a camera operator in the shop doing any video like that. So that was different and a little weird.
Nice.
But yeah. It's very cool to be able to see like the camera can actually move now, like while I'm working. So we're
it's not all static shots.
It's not all static shots. It takes a little bit of getting used to, like, on both of our parts of, like, for him, like, figuring out, like, okay, where can I go to kind of pick up the next shot, or how I make it more seamless. And for me, it's like, okay, I still am not quite 100% there with like the same comfort level presenting to camera while there's someone else there, especially with someone else.
Just talked about this.
It is
right. Back to quiet and shy, Matt.
I'm like a different person. Yes.
Matt the shy.
Quiet and shy.
But we just established, what was it, last episode, that the 360 degree camera eliminates the need for a cameraman. And now you're getting a cameraman in.
Well, I mean,
starting to not believe the things you say.
We're playing with that too. So there's whatever.
A lot going on.
Just different. It's just different.
That sounds good.
Have you thought about like making Brad wear a mask or something?
Well, he's like very professional and very good about it. Maybe so I can't really see what he's doing, because his face, he made hoods for the camera lenses. So he's like in there.
Oh, no kidding. He's deep up.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's fully invested in the camera operation, which is fantastic. So I don't have to even think about it at all. But it's still it's like getting this comfort level of like acting myself or acting my on camera persona more with him here. It's taking a little bit of adjustment. So we did a quick video of making a pairing block for a Thrumeyer dovetail. So it's a really quick, easy project for me to like just run through. We shot it in like 2 hours, but it was different. I'm like, I don't know if I'm like, normally I'd be a little more chipper and happy and gleeful sounding on camera, but this time I'm a little more like serious almost.
It's the constant stress about like, what am I saying like next? That? What's the next thing being filmed?
Nothing that fancy Shannon.
Ebony miter pairing block.
Oh, that's pretty.
See that's when that you fancy. Know, is this overkill? No, you were just saying earlier, this solid ebony miter pairing block.
Okay.
This is the sweet spot, right? When you've gone too far.
That is definitely too far.
Mine's perfect. Only walnut, yeah. So there's see? That.
Amateur.
I get what you're saying about the filming thing, because I always have thought about the possibility of a full-time person just running the cameras. Certainly would make for better video, but it also stresses me out. And I think that might be what you're feeling, because woodworking and project building doesn't happen on that kind of schedule. So this person is going to have a lot of downtime and the pressure to keep them busy and to keep them, you know, like making them feel like they're there for a reason means you don't get the breathers you normally get or the time to just reset and just kind of get ready for the next thing. So I'm not sure that I will ever have that kind of like constant camera person always on site.
I think we've kind of arrived at
a point where I would screw everything up.
You probably would. You definitely would.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I would overcut everything. I'd mess up all my cuts. Yeah. I can't deal with the pressure.
I think we arrived at kind of like this notion of what makes the most sense for it. I don't think having a camera person in the shop for the entire project makes sense, but for at least for the stuff I'm doing, any of like the hand tool type work, I think it makes a lot of sense, especially as I'm like trying to person like when I do it myself, I'm like, okay, I gotta get close-ups, I gotta make sure my face is in the shot all the time and like stage all those things, whereas if someone's there running the cameras for those quick things, it can go a lot faster and I can get a lot more dynamic shots of it happening.
True.
But the stark difference between working with Brad in the shop versus working with Brad out on the sawmill, it's very weird, because the sawmill is very easy. I'm like, I'm running the saw and he's just like panning around getting shots or whatever, moving cameras. And it's a lot more formulaic of a video anyway. It's like, okay, Matt's cutting, moving the saw head, and then Matt's moving stuff with the skid steer, and then Matt's tossing water at it and talking about the wood. It's,
right.
We've already established the overall pace of that video or the overall just flow of that video, but going into some like whole nother area of like, okay, how do we make this work? It was just, it's very interesting. And again, nobody cares about this, but this is the kind of things that we think about behind the scenes of like, how do I keep making this stuff better for you to enjoy?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out, like, sitting in my shop now, where I would put a cameraman. That would be the biggest issue. Like
a little tight space.
Yeah. Climb up the wall over there and stand on top of the lumber rack. That's really the only safe space for you. I'm envisioning one of the members of the hand tool school was at Roy Underhill's school, I think for the last class, if not the last class, like, cause Roy's school is closing. This is his last season. And the local newspaper or TV channel came in to film like a segment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so he's got a full class. I think Roy has like 12 benches in his shop, if I remember correctly. So full class, 12 students, Roy, Bill Anderson, who was actually teaching the class, and then a film crew. And oh, and like there's several still geez. Shots that the student of mine, he was taking the class, took. And there's like a guy cutting dovetails and there's a dude like right there with a camera, like wedged into this tiny spot trying to get a shot of it. And I was like, that doesn't look awkward in the slightest. And you can only imagine people like, you know, who aren't used to talking to a camera, like Matt, people who can't talk to a camera.
Like me, who doesn't have almost a decade experience, you know, those people. Right.
Did these people sign up for that particular experience or was the camera crew?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Upon the camera crew experience.
I don't think so.
Cause that's right. That's a great way to get real bad reviews.
Is that the, you know, like, I'm glad you get class. A discount.
Which one is well, the it? School's closing anyway. So, you know,
what really do they care? That's good.
Burn Yikes. Those bridges now while you still can.
I'm sure there were some non-disclosures, like, releases signed or something like that. I don't know. I don't think it was supposed to be that way, but yeah, it was kind of awkward looking shots of, you know, there's like six too many people in frame right now. What's going on?
Well, do you remember we used to talk about the whole Wood Talk weekend thing? And I remember when we would brainstorm, you know, how would this look? It's in-person education, but we'd also want to capture it so people at home could see it if they couldn't make it to the event. And there was no way in my head that we can kind of make those two work together. You either give people a really good in-person hands-on experience or you capture the footage, one or the other. Mm-hmm. And at some point, one is going to step on the toes of the other. And that's really tricky to do, to pull that off at the same time. Yeah. All right. Well,
you have to have a whole full production staff and 26 cameras.
Right, yeah. Matt? Seriously.
More the better.
All right. What else you got going on, Matt? Anything else?
I'm just finishing that up. And then this week I'll start installing the flooring in the house, which will be, I'm actually looking forward to because it's actually like wood related. I'm doing like a giant wood arrangement thing. I don't know. I'm actually excited about it because I actually get to like look at wood and like do a giant composition.
Oh,
type of thing.
So right, you're really doing it in that like thinking in terms of the whole of the floor.
Absolutely.
Not just kind of,
I'm thinking like
really
like aisles and like the way that people are going to be walking through the room and how they're going to be seeing the different sections of like envisioning all the things that will be on top of the floor in the future.
That's cool. Look at you. So you're going to be one of those, awesome. One of those meme pictures that gets shared 1,000 times of that like awful hallway and staircase with continuous grain.
No, it's going to be all like rift white oak where you can't see much anything with the few hints of weird shit here and there. Oh, I'm sorry. Weird That's stuff cool, here though. And there.
Oh, there's another thing we got to bleep today. Boop. Good job. we're going to have two of them in the show.
The weird Matt wood grain things, a little bit of crotch here. Lindsay wants some bow ties somewhere still. So it'd be boring, but then spots of uniqueness.
Sure. Okay. Well, that sounds good. Excellent. Cool. We got some kickback and I got your name there, Matt, if you want to read that.
It's like, you're like, hey, Matt, just talk. Let's have him talk some more. Let's not give him a break at all.
It would be quicker. Thought you'd be quicker, but all right, here we go.
Well, Shannon went first. I got Shannon's vibes of overspeaking. So now,
yeah,
now you're dealing with the repercussions of that. All right.
Okay.
I liked earlier Matt when he just like shut up and did what he was told. Just talking Matt. Back Matt.
Yeah.
His adolescent Matt. Was shy. I'm tired of this.
Yeah. It's not even that he's like more outgoing now. It's just he's more annoying
what's
happening.
That's definitely what it is. Yeah.
What's going on?
I'm aging. That's what's happening. I'm aging into it.
Okay.
All right. This is from Rick. I think the biscuit joiner use dropped off after people discovered that biscuits being compressed would swell when glued into the slots. And if they didn't bury the biscuits far enough away from the surface, they would slowly distort the surface and reveal themselves. Dominoes not being compressed, but rather cut from wood stock, don't tend to swell as much when glued. And because they're thicker, you don't stack them like biscuits were. Also, biscuits have to be fresh because they would absorb moisture when left out in the typical shop, Arizona and Colorado excluded, and would require some hammering to make them fit, making the post-finishing reveal all the worst. Just a thought from some random guy on the internet.
Nice.
Random guy.
What about New Mexico, Rick? You're saying people in New Mexico didn't have to worry about it? I just feel that's... Come on now. Utah?
Mm-hmm.
Wyoming? Montana?
He's a humidist? Maybe.
Humidist. Yeah,
that was bad.
Rick the humidist. There's a show title right there. Be like, what the hell?
Humidist.
Okay, you nice. Got the next one.
So this is from Jay. This is a metallurgy kickback. He says, I know you like to be precisely accurate, so I have to correct your talk about saw sharpening. Nice. You said not to hammer the teeth in line before sharpening because it makes them soft. That is the opposite of reality. After sharpening, you set the teeth so you're bending the metal. That causes work hardening along the flexure line. Further, when you bend them back, it's more so. The reason this causes things to break is that you're work hardening to failure. That is, harder also means more brittle, and eventually it no longer elastically deforms. It just snaps, which is what I'm very worried about could be what's happening to my holdfasts.
Yeah. Like, that'd be disappointing.
They're hardening because they've been flexing for 10 years now since I've had them. Mm-hmm. Something like that. I just have to believe that can't be the case. But yes, he's absolutely right. It's not sharp. It's not softening so that it's breaking off. It's hardening. There we go. Okay. Thanks, Jay. We appreciate that. And if you have any comments on holdfasts, let me know.
Let us know what's going on there. All right. Well, thanks for that feedback, Jay. All right. So you guys like to make furniture, right? Yeah. I know I do.
I'm more of like a wood floor guy now.
You're more like a anything but furniture guy now, honestly.
I just like that Barnes and Noble making flooring. Is it?
I'm going to make a wooden tank next. Why not?
Oh, boy. All right. Well, if you want to elevate your furniture making game, Rockler's got you covered. They have a furniture making guide that's pretty fantastic. The guide walks you through common joinery techniques, tips for building outdoor furniture, table making tips, including a guide to buying and using epoxy, installing a Murphy bed, the easy Murphy DIY bed. Updates,
the Murphy famous bed. Murphy bed,
easy DIY updates that you can make around the house and more. You can also choose from over 50 free woodworking plans. Is one of those yours, Matt? We always talk about this. Your little Alfie table thingamajig?
I mean, I guess it's family furniture. It's shop stuff.
Shop furniture. Yes.
I guess it'd be in the woodworking plans.
Yeah.
Thing.
See that?
I don't.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go look. I want to find it.
That's the Alfie
you could
table.
Find. Yeah.
With the
you can find the guide this month
or
on
not.
The Rockler homepage. Or you just keep talking. Whatever you want to do, Matt.
Why do you even ask me questions? Young, why do you even involve adolescent, me in your ad reads?
Adolescent rebellious Matt is a pain in my ass. Jeez. Okay. You can find the guide this month on the Rockler homepage or in the show notes for this podcast. Oh boy, we botched that one.
Why
sorry,
am I
Rockler.
Even here? Like it's like
we'll do
why?
Better next time.
Or not. We probably won't. I mean, I don't know.
I was gonna say, I feel like we've been saying that for 3 years now.
Somehow
just keeps getting worse. Rockler,
they Rockler, must not Rockler, have better Rockler. Options.
There you go.
That's all there is to it. Okay. All right.
You know,
so let's get to our
like
question, shall
furniture?
We?
IKEA.
They do. And we're going to talk about them a little bit now. So, oh, crap. What's this dude's name? I forgot his name. Anybody remember his name? I don't have his name here. All right.
Sounds like a problem.
It is. Sean, I'll have to go back and figure it out. But it's a two-parter. So there's two parts to this question. Chuck. I'm going to read it. And you'll know who you are when you hear it. So this person says, listening to old episodes on $4.99 and a caller asked about IKEA. I agree with your assessment that their engineering, sales model, and distribution are all very impressive. Do you believe that the lack of durability stems mostly from particle board? I ask because my recent research into which domino to buy exposed the Festool interconnect system, Not many people are aware of this and even less talk about it. And I think a lot of people talk about that system. Any experience with it? Any idea on strength and durability in hardwood? Or is it targeted at cabinet makers? All right, so there is a second part, totally unrelated, but a second part to the question I'll get to afterwards. So I've used this system in the past. In fact, it's holding together my son's bunk bed right now, if that gives you any idea of how much I trust it. It is a very good system. So I think, yes, I think part of the issue with IKEA furniture is the material itself. If they're using particle board sheet goods for these things, well, you guys know how that goes. You put a lot of stress on it, and it's very easy to kind of like pop those little cam things. And that's part of the other problem is they use that sort of cam lock system, at least from what I can see. A lot of the stuff is assembled that way, where you got those little circular cams that go in, and the little thing goes into that, and you twist it, and it kind of grabs it. But it's all sort of kind of loosey-goosey, and it's only once this whole thing is together is this thing kind of structurally sound. And the other thing is, in addition to those cams, which are what are bringing the thing together, they usually have very loose-fitting dowels. I call them why bother dowels, because they're almost not doing anything. And there are times where I will glue those in just to get a little bit more stability out of them. But if, words aren't my forte today. So if you compare this to what the Festool system is doing, their connect bolts, they go a lot deeper into the material. They are constructed of much better materials themselves. And then when you crank down on them, they are very, very strong. But they are not the only thing at play here. What you typically have is a series of regular dominoes that are kind of dry fit into the joints. And then a couple of those connector bolts that are pulling everything together, working, you know, almost like a clamp. So it's all those things working in conjunction that make those 1,000 times better than anything you would get with just classic cam, rotating cam hardware. So night and day difference, but I don't think it even matters if you can use it in hardwood. I certainly did. They work in hardwood, they work in sheet goods, but they're going to work better in every possible way. It's just going to be a whole lot more expensive. It's like more expensive to get in the game and expensive because the things themselves are quite expensive. So. Do you guys have any experience with the Festool connector systems or
not yet?
Anything to add that I might be missing? They're good. I mean, no. I have moved that bunk bed once, so it's only had to be moved from Denver to here, and it was no problem at all. Like everything just came apart the way I wanted it to and then went right back together, and it's just as sturdy as it ever was.
I think with a lot of that like knockdown furniture stuff you buy, like especially from IKEA, it's like it's made in the sense of like all the joinery has to be there. You can't, one individual connection cannot be stressed because it's looking at more of the whole, and it's designed for like static loads.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like we also,
and not meant to move from one place to another.
We have these, I think they're like kid chairs or whatever, but they're made with threaded inserts. So the legs are wood and they have a threaded insert into the end grain of the leg, and that goes up into a bolt and you screw all together. The threaded insert just comes right out of the end of that leg all the time. We have four of them. I've repaired like three of them already because the threaded insert fails to the wood connection because it's going into end grain.
Yeah, right.
And just shears off. I'm like, okay, well, there's that. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the it's the thing about it. It is cool. Cool looking furniture in a lot of cases, but it just isn't going to hold up real well. Okay, second question. I'll try to make this quick. Relates to finished dry times. I live in Albuquerque, which is about a mix of Phoenix and Denver. I feel like this is like a straight shot at me. cold nights and days in winter, 25 to 45. I'm careful not to spray rattle can, I guess, below 50 in case Shannon walks by. And hey, you know, it's a little cold for finishing, don't you? Mind your own business.
Actually,
you know, it's bad for the environment, right?
It's too cold and it's bad for the environment. You evil person. Two strikes.
I limit varnishes and polys to warmer days. The cold doesn't seem to retard drying times much. Case in point, table that I wet sanded some BLO onto last night is very dry 12 hours later. Is finished drying dependent more on humidity than temperature? All right, let me try to sum this up the best I can. It's going to depend on both, really. What's up, Ava? What is that?
Hello.
That's beautiful. You made that?
Yeah.
You want to come here?
What the hell?
Yeah, come here. Show it. Show us your pillow. Did you make that with mommy?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it comfy?
Wow.
It's kind of hard, but that's okay.
Okay. It's cool. Hey, thanks for stopping by. Okay. Love you. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks for stopping by.
All these live guests.
Second guest.
Yeah. So, all right. Where was I? A temperature definitely does play a role. Humidity can certainly exacerbate things and make things a little bit more difficult. And I can tell you, having lived in both of those locations, the humidity is a huge factor in terms of how fast things set up and dry. But he's mentioning that boiled linseed oil. And I think that is something specifically that we could look at. When you're looking at these oils that are kind of more your natural oils and your drying oils, they don't necessarily worry so much about temperature. The low temps might extend some of that dry time to some extent, but they'll still eventually get there. But there certainly are a lot of finishes. Just look on the can. They're going to tell you which temperatures it's safe to apply them in. Humidity does play a role in making things take a little bit longer if the humidity is really high. But I was spoiled in both Denver and Phoenix with some finishes where I would apply ArmorSeal. Great example, right? So it's a wiping varnish. You could apply probably safely 3 coats a day, something like that. If I tried to do that here, I don't think it would go as well. So, I mean, just to kind of very quickly answer that, you do have to watch both humidity and temperature, but it also very much depends on what the finish is that you're applying. And in the case of boiled linseed oil, here, that's the funny thing, though. I don't think I've ever applied something like boiled linseed oil and would say that it feels very dry 12 hours later. Yeah, I don't care where you are. That's a short amount of time to say that it feels very dry. I mean, maybe it was the first coat, so it really absorbed it very quickly, but that oil certainly isn't cured yet.
Yeah, it might just be that's more of the fact that the wood is thirsty than anything else.
Yeah, you know, I don't think so.
They just sucked it in really quickly and now it feels dry.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a quick answer to the question. Both humidity and temperature are factors, and it just kind of depends on a case-by-case basis which finish we're talking about.
There we go. Well done. This is from Roman. He says, I have a Bailey number 5 plane that I got from my grandfather-in-law. The blade was too pitted to get an edge on it. When I removed the chip breaker, Matt's name is popping up and I'm trying to read and it's like,
I'm trying to make it easier for Matt.
Stop clicking on them.
I'm making all the corrections so you can read it easier.
I appreciate good that, I suppose. when I removed the chip breaker, Oh boy!
Going to put him.
Mark, you always record on the weekends when we're all feeling a little bit
members
off
of this call.
I could just kick him off the call. Abilities. I do
you
have the ability to just
my
kick
question.
Him off.
I'm out of here.
I mean, I feel like we could mute him so he doesn't know, so he can just keep ranting and we can carry on with the show.
You know? That would be fantastic. Yeah.
Why aren't you responding we avoid the confrontation to anything altogether. I say?
It's a Skype issue, right? That's what it is. Uh-huh. Right. And we're not even using Skype. So
it's been a few years since we've used Skype.
Yeah. Roman, I apologize. You have a legitimate question here. So he says, I removed the chip breaker and I took note that the bevel was up. I got a new Veritas blade installed, but I'm not getting any decent results. My question is, on a number 5, should the bevel be up or down? The internet says contradictory results.
Oh boy.
What? Who? Wow. That never happens. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. So, Roman, if we're talking about an actual number 5, it is a bevel down plane. He says a Bailey number 5 plane. That could be a lot of things, but if it is numbered a number 5, that is a bevel down plane. The number 5 is also colloquially known as the jack plane, and there are bevel up jack planes. Those go by a different number that I'm forgetting. I think it's 151. I don't know. I notoriously am bad at Stanley numbering systems. Once I get beyond like number 9, I don't know anymore. But there is a bevel up plane, but the traditional jack plane is bevel down. My issue when I get questions like this is I get a lot of this phraseology. I'm not getting good results. Well, what does that mean? Are you not getting a shaving? What does it mean you're not getting good results? My concern, however, is if you bought a Veritas blade, that may not fit a vintage number 5 plane because Veritas blades are much thicker. I know Veritas, they have a chart on their website that shows which blades will fit which types of planes. If you just picked up a regular Veritas number 5 plane, like a jack plane blade, it may or may not actually fit. And if it is thicker and you're trying to put a chip breaker and the lever cap in place, that can be causing some issues. Assuming that he got the right blade. And again, I haven't bought a blade from Veritas in a while, so I could be wrong here. But
Assuming he's got one that does actually fit, it absolutely should be beveled down. And the chip breaker needs to be set close to the cutting edge. How close depends on really what type of cutting you're doing, but let's just say close, a 16th of an inch, if not shorter than that, to the edge of the blade, and the blade, the bevel should be down. If you're still not getting, quote, decent results, I'd like to know what that means. But yeah, definitely put it in bevel down, and that should help pretty heavily there.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Now's your turn, Matt.
I don't know. Now's your turn, Matt. I don't know.
Over.
There's all this like child noise above my head. I'm yeah, half listening to little... you guys and half listening to what's going on upstairs because my kids are having a play date. So it's like my kids and some other kids that I don't quite know.
And the crazy thing is I feel like it's in my house. I can't tell if it's your kids or mine because I also have kids above me now and I don't know who's making the noise. So,
okay.
Could be mine.
Okay. This question is from Aaron. This may be a legitimate question or an illegitimate question. Who knows? We don't judge. Who knows?
We'll find out.
Aaron says, I know nothing about solid wood flooring, but I do see people who either nail them into the subfloor or use adhesive to glue them down. How does this work with expansion and contraction? I would imagine the boards at the edge of the room could move a large distance. Thanks. Yes, that's exactly what happens. So the proper install on this would be to leave a gap along the side of the flooring where it gets towards the actual wall. And that'll give you your expansion or contraction gaps as that floor is going to be expanding and contracting over the seasons. Now, it's not really a big deal because you have a layer of sheetrock and then you have your baseboard molding that goes on top of that. So it's going to cover any gap you might have along the side of the wall. The two different, securement methods here, whether they're using nails or adhesives, both of those are going to allow that flooring to float. The adhesives tend to be a little more pliable, so they do have some give and allow that floor to kind of move around a little bit. And the biggest problem that you'll see with like just doing a nail down floor is that as those boards contract and move and everything, they might actually change positions relative to the rest of the field, especially if you have a flooring that is multiple different grain orientations that are all moving in different rates. They start shoving each other out of the way and shifting around. And if they're just nailed using either cleats or staples, that might actually tweak those staples or nails a little bit. And the new position will be kind of out of alignment. You'll see some separation along some of the seams and it'll kind of open up. If you look at an older floor, you'll see that all the tongue groove connections are a little bit open. They might be shifted a little bit and then some are tight. And it's just kind of like all over the place. The adhesives help with that quite a bit because they don't allow the boards to shift relative to each other and find a new position. So anyway, that's a little bit about flooring, I guess, from some guy who knows nothing about flooring, who just did it once and is supposed to do it again.
So the adhesive, though, I think the key is it's not like wood glue in a sense,
no,
right? It's not that pliable type of adhesive. It's got flexibility to it and still allows these things to breathe and to move.
Yeah, the
other thing you have to think about, if it's rigid, if the glue is rigid as you walk on it and the subfloor compresses and the wood compresses, that causes even bigger problems. Like, mm-hmm. I think the wood movement is kind of a nice byproduct, but that needs to compress and flex under load or you'll mm-hmm. have all kinds of bad issues. And a really loud floor, yeah, too, if you think yeah. about it. If it were super rigid, it would be less comfortable. Yeah, quite a bit.
Okay. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler is everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com and use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Girl. Yeah. Gift cards. Yes.
Just broke something.
Did you just, okay. Did you just break that? Whatever that was.
Broke it. It's just a wrist rest. But I guess it's got a. It's got a. Did you hear the snap too?
Yes.
I mean, it's still going to work just fine. It's just got whatever is inside there is now snapped. The subfloor just to foldable. My flooring has snapped.
It's knocked down.
Sorry. It was in the moment. I was excited. $250, guys.
$250, enough to buy another wrist rest.
It's a big gift branded card.
A blue one. Yeah. Oh, Lord. You know who else is family owned? This show.
Yeah, baby.
Guys, thank you for the questions this week. Send us more questions. We love them. You can send us via voicemail. Well, technically, record a voicemail and then email it. Actually, what you have to do, no, just send it to woodtalkshow@gmail.com or go to woodtalkshow.com to submit your questions. We had lots of good questions this week. And you also can be a source of high quality and innovative advice, like on metallurgy. Hook me up. I want to know.
Okay.
That was bad.
All right. Awesome. Good one. Good one, Shannon. All right. Well, I guess that's going to do it for us. We will see you guys next time. Peace out.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
Toodle.
Go to Rockler.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.